What's up?
Going on?
What? Okay, we're actually recording now.
Okay.
What's up?
What's going on? This is like our fifth attempt already to just start.
Yeah. Fun times.
One characteristic emerged as a significant predictor of success. It was grit.
Awesome day. I don't know if anybody else is in the Southeast, but we've had great weather this week. It's like 75 degrees outside, so I wish we could record this outside, but it'd be super loud.
Yeah, I actually thought about that. Head up to Victory, grab a sandwich and a cocktail, record some podcasts.
Cocktail would make this podcast a lot better.
Yeah, we'll have to do some, like,
for all the people listening,
some late night editions or some happy hour editions.
Speaking of cocktails, so I did something pretty dumb yesterday. So yesterday I went to get a handle of bourbon. I'm a big bourbon guy, and I like to try new things. So I was just looking around for something that I hadn't had before, and I usually like to get a bottle that's in the range of like $40 to $50 if it's like a nice one that I'm like trying to try. So I went and looked at one, and it was like aged for 11 years, 135 proof, and I was like, wow, $50. Wow, this is a great deal. So I got it, and
I'm nervous.
I went up to the counter and he's like, wow, you have really good taste. And I was like, what? It's like $50. It's not like the greatest thing. What? He's like, you're going to like this. You must be an expert or something. I was like, no, I just pick a new one every time. And he rings me up and it was $150 for that little bottle. So
and you stuck with it.
And I've just, yeah, because he had like labeled me as an expert and like, oh, you really know what
that's a sales tactic right there.
And then I was like, oh, I don't want to act like I don't know what this is. So I went with it.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, bucks. 150. Yeah, that seems about right. Yeah.
Yeah. I told my wife when I got home, she was not pleased, to say the least.
Did you try it?
Yes, it's very good.
Was it worth it?
I mean, for me, it was, but
you
for
have
her,
you have to say no. That now.
Yeah. No, I mean, we'll try it later. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't bring it in to share.
So well, yeah, but we have some in here.
True.
We've got some Atlanta-based bourbon in here. We always keep bourbon around. That's like it's a big, important piece of our company.
Fixture.
Gotta have it. Anyways.
Well, that's fun. So that's almost as much as we're spending on advertising.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, big topic this week. We'll be talking about advertising, which is something that we have definitely not done in the past and kind of been very skeptical over, especially since we are in the ad tech world and we see what happens behind the scenes. But maybe it's a better place to start by just going into kind of like a quick update of our weeks.
Yeah. So we had some operational challenges last week, processing a ton of data, which is good. Good problem. Got a lot of webhooks from Intercom on the user feed side. And so we had some scaling and rethinking to do. So still a bit more to do on that front, but spent most of Friday doing that, which was not originally planned. So yeah. But otherwise this week got back to our main project on the user feed side. So that's the work cycle's wrapping up next week. So trying to get everything nailed down on that front, but it's been nice that we did so much of the upfront work that it has been moving along pretty seamlessly, which has been nice. Nothing too specific, I guess, that is bothering me right now. So yeah, just grinding away.
Well, I'm sitting here like while you're talking, trying to think of what I've done. This is kind of how I feel every week. It's like, I have no idea what I did.
Yeah.
Feels like I don't know what I did. And also I feel like I did nothing.
Yep.
But so I've actually been, because of that, I've been in Notion. I've been keeping track of, like, I have my own private weekly Kanban board type of thing. So there's actually like a bunch of different things that I've done. But the nice thing is this week, I feel like I've spent probably 90% of my time on marketing and sales stuff, which is nice because that's what I like to do. Kind of my background. And sometimes you get bogged down in a lot of support stuff or just like accounting, like everything. But this has been nice, and that kind of flows into one of our topics of discussion, which is around like advertising and trying to put some gas on the fire, I guess you could say,
I guess before you get into it, one thing I did think of that I haven't, I think I brought up in episode one, or we sort of alluded to it at some point. Another thing I did this week was experiment with some of the new features of Rails 6. This is obviously for the developers out there, but the way I'm experimenting with that is actually a side project. So I did a little bit of that just to see what kind of elements of that we could incorporate into our different products. So the little side project that I built for our internal purposes that I plan to open up at some point is hillchart.app, which is exactly what it says. For those of you familiar with Basecamp's hill charts, it's just the hill chart part minus all the Basecamp part. So it's that was one thing we really liked about Basecamp was that it gave us that visual sort of representation of some of our to-do lists. So when we switched over to Notion earlier this year, that was the one thing, one of the few things, I guess, that we missed, especially trying to understand where people are on different projects without having to like harass them and ask questions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It gives a nice snapshot and like series of snapshots. So anyone who's interested in something like that, it's a super simple tool. So go over to hillchart.app and drop your email in.
It also helps since we've been trying to take the shape up model of like doing a lot more on the front end of like a project and, you know, shaping it up and all that kind of stuff. It fits really well with their old like hill chart model. And we really were missing that when we moved a lot of the things that we were doing to Notion. I wish we could use both, honestly.
Yeah.
Basecamp and Notion. And maybe we'll go back. I mean, we've switched project management tools probably like 4 times
yep.
at this point. So maybe we'll go back. I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I like one of the things I like about Notion is it's just low friction to add stuff and you don't have to drill into a project per se. If you just have like pages of stuff you're wanting to jot down. So that's one thing I really like, but yeah, who knows? But in the meantime, for anyone not using Basecamp who wants to track work on hills, I'm working on that. So check that out.
And thanks Basecamp for coming up with that.
Yes.
It was a good idea. So
hat tip.
We used it.
Yep.
Cool. Well, so maybe let's transition into one of our topics. So I guess our first podcast, we went over hitting 250K in revenue and, you know, everything that kind of went into that. Well, now we're kind of obviously getting into the next phase. Okay, we've hit 250K in revenue. How do we grow faster? I think that's always like, we always think about ways that we can grow faster without, I guess, I mean, there's obvious ways that you can grow faster, but some of those ways are not ways that we want to, they're not paths that we want to go down. And, you know, obviously one of those ways would be raising money, hiring salespeople, doing all that kind of stuff. That certainly would probably help us grow faster.
Yep.
But maybe not grow smarter and grow in a sustainable, profitable way.
Well, and I think too, because the times we've tried to go outbound for ad reform specifically, it was trickier than it seemed initially. So it was like a combination of not really wanting to scale the team a ton, much less raise outside money, but mm-hmm. also not having a high confidence in like how easy it would be. At least it would be a grind to get that thing off the ground.
Right. And this also kind of flows into the topic that's been pretty trendy this week or over the past week or so. A couple different podcasts have talked about this idea of like, in terms of like a bootstrap business, what's enough? And then also, is it just a straight trade-off between like being profitable and then, you know, the other side being like trying to grow and spend more money to grow faster and have like nicer features for people and all that kind of stuff? So we've been thinking about this stuff a lot even before any of that kind of stuff came out, because we're trying to think of, you know, how do we grow? Maybe how do we spend a little bit more money, you know, a little less profit and invest back into the business? And so we've been doing some different things. One is obviously we mentioned this in the last or one of the last podcasts is hiring a developer. So we're investing back in the product. But also, how do we invest in trying to grow a little bit faster and maybe experiment on some different things that we haven't really tried in the past? And so one of those things is advertising. I think that started with talking to we've talked to, you know, some different advisors or mentors or friends about how we should approach that. And should we advertise for both user feed and ad reform, or just start with one of them? Or is one of them a better type of product or better business to advertise?
Yeah.
You know, do digital advertising. So we're pretty skeptical about advertising because, you know, ad reform is in the ad tech world. And we, you know, obviously pay attention pretty close there. And there's just so much ad fraud. There's so much different things going on in the ad tech ecosystem that are so complex that it's really just hard to know whether humans, the right humans, are seeing your ads.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure so, people listening to this who have done advertising and had success with it are probably like, that's silly. But especially because we come from like the performance world where we saw the terrible side of ads in terms of performance. And then we work with so many people who...
Web performance, by the way.
Web performance.
Loading times and all that kind of stuff.
And now at Ad Reform, we spend a lot of time with people complaining about ad fraud and viewability and all the specific stuff around ads that I think it's kind of hardened us to the good part about advertising, or like when it's done well, or even just done on a smaller scale, it can be a good thing. So
and ads are, to me, a marketing channel that are very like much of a like an experiment. So a lot of times when you're a bootstrap company, it's kind of hard to spend money on experiments that you don't feel very confident about, because it's like every dime is important.
Yep.
So
I guess that relates kind of to how much is enough too. Like as we've gotten bigger, or in terms of revenue, as our revenue grows, we get a little more comfortable spending money, obviously, right? Similar to like on the personal side, if you get a raise, you might be more likely to spend more money on the next apartment or what on the next dinner, which obviously can be risky because you don't want to start just spending what you have. But it is an adjustment to be like, oh, it's okay. We can spend a little money here. Whereas before, part of the reason we switched project management tools, for example, is like trying to use free tools to begin with, because you don't want to spend the money. And then, oh, hey, we have a little money. We have better tools. We can spend some money. So the same would go for acquisition, and especially because we've had some success on the free-ish tiers like we talked about before. It's like it makes it easier to keep being like, maybe later we'll try spending money to see what happens. But
yeah. I think we wrote a blog like maybe 8 months in, something like 8 months into the company, and it was all about all the tools we use. We had like 40 different software products that we were using, of which I think 95% of them were free. We probably were spending like $100 a month on software. And then fast forward to now, and I think we probably spend a couple thousand dollars on software tools, maybe a little bit more per month. So we've definitely like, you know, I don't feel as bad about spending money as long as it saves us time, because everything's about time now. And, you know, obviously we have the money to spend. So we're still careful, but.
Yeah, when you get to the point when you're paying yourself, like you have enough money to pay yourselves, potentially, you know, have a couple team members, then paying for software is just another version of that, right? Like you're hiring something to do a job for you. And so, and as an owner of a software company, it feels good to help other owners of software companies. So
exactly.
Anyway, bit of a sidetrack there, but back to the advertising.
So yeah, so we I guess diving into what we're doing. So we decided to only do advertising for Ad Reform right now. And the reason why we decided to do that was, number one, Ad Reform's average deal size is much larger than user feed. So it's about, I think we're at about around $700 a month for Ad Reform. And then where user feed is more like $100 a month. So, you know, when you think about the money you're spending on a monthly basis for advertising, if the simple thought is like, if I can just get one customer a month new from advertising on Ad Reform, like it easily pays for itself. So, with that in mind, we're probably spending, I guess we're spending, like $450, I think, right now, a month on advertising. And we're experimenting through a few different advertising channels. One is through a company called AdLib, which is actually a customer of ad reform and user feed, which is pretty cool. Shout out to Mike.
Yeah, the only two-time customer, I think, in the mix. The Venn diagram of markets for ad reform and user feed has one person standing in the middle of those two circles.
There you go. So we've been using AdLib, which is kind of a... they basically utilize Media Math in the background, and Media Math is like a very very much like a premium DSP. And so they're tapping into that kind of premium inventory, but there's no minimums. And so, you know, it's very much for like small to medium sized businesses instead of like large enterprises like, you know, Sony or something like that, who's probably working with Media Math. So anyways, we've been using them. And we've also been, there's a free tool out there in the market that a lot of people in ad tech use to like load ads and test ads. So we've been sponsoring that particular site. And then the last route is through Reddit. So Reddit has, you know, one of their advertising channels is to be able to advertise directly to like different subreddits. So there's some that are pretty big in the ad tech space or ad op space. So we've been focusing on those subreddits and advertising to them. So those are three different avenues. And it's been pretty cool. We've been doing this for maybe like 2 or 3 weeks now.
Yep. Not quite a month, I think.
And we've been seeing really great results in terms of signups. So, you know, obviously you're going to look at like impressions, you're going to look at traffic, you're going to look at signups, and then lastly, and probably the most important at the end, is conversions, which we haven't really had enough time yet to really know if that's working right. But we've been getting tons of signups, a lot, like probably double or triple the signups that we were getting prior to that, and not spending a ton of money yet. And so that's been super exciting. And I mentioned earlier, I've been working mostly on sales and marketing this week. And that's because we've been getting so many signups and trials that that's all I've been doing, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been a good first run of this. We actually started with the sponsorship, which we get a ton of impressions, not a lot of clicks. And so things were pretty quiet. And so we actually been running that for a little longer. But once we added in these other couple channels, it's been great to see some new leads coming in. So hopefully they'll start to convert pretty soon, and we can keep that. That'll give us more to push on. Whereas the pure inbound style is it's always a little uneasy because you don't know when, like it's nothing you can invest in per se. Like you have to invest in long-term inbound like SEO, but you don't really have a direct way to spend money and get money back. So hopefully this will be a bit more of that for us.
I've said it a lot this week, but I'm very excited about the potential of this because, you know, one thing we've had trouble with, at least on the ad reform side, well, the great part about ad reform is that there's not a lot of competition and it's kind of a niche space. And so most of our traffic just comes through Google, and people search certain keywords. They find us, we show up first. And we, you know, have a trickle of leads, and it's, you know, it's a free acquisition channel. But we've never really been able to figure out a way to kind of build a repeatable paid acquisition process. Sales, you know, my background's in sales, and obviously I tried that. That was my first try. It didn't yield great results. Not something that would have ROI in terms of like actually hiring a person or a team to do that. We could go deeper into why that's the case, but there's a lot of reasons. But so being able to find some sort of paid acquisition channel that has strong ROI is extremely exciting. And for ad reform too, like our churn is almost like, I mean, we have net negative churn. So people stick around for the long run. And so paid acquisition makes a lot of sense if we can get it right.
Yeah, it's very easy to justify that upfront, assuming that we get some of these conversions that we're looking for. It should be pretty easy to justify spending money on this stuff because it'll pay for itself pretty quickly. So yeah, it'll be fun to see how this goes. And I think also just for us to go on that journey of the advertising world will be fun.
Yeah, And the good news is because our product is an app, like it is an ad tech, it's more of a kind of a back office workflow tool, but we have a ton of friends and people that we work with that actually understand advertising. So we'll continue to like lean on them to, you know, figure out if what we're doing is right, how to optimize it, all that stuff. And, you know, if things keep going well and we start to convert some of these at a higher rate, I'm totally willing to spend a lot more money than we're spending right now.
Yeah. And I guess contrast that with the acquisition channel for user feed, which we've talked about in episode one a bit, but the app store being our primary source of leads, it's a bit trickier because it's kind of a different version of the SEO inbound model, right? Where you have a limited kind of control and you kind of just have to hope that people find you and install you. You have some control. We don't have a ton of visibility. I know that's something the team at Intercom is working on to get a bit more analytics around the app store for app developers. But we did experiment with a few things there, and we've actually been trying to track our rankings a bit more in there to just see where we lie in the various categories and search results. And so we've played around with some stuff to try to optimize that to the extent we can, but there's only so much you can do.
I guarantee you nobody else is doing that in the app store, but what do you want to talk about that a little bit? Like you kind of built like a little tool to basically monitor the app store and like rankings and stuff.
Yeah, hack together a quick thing. I think there's more we could do there, but trying to identify like how we can make sure we're higher up in the results pages. Not knowing where people are coming from makes it tricky, right? Because I don't know what keywords are searching to find us, so I don't really know what keywords I should be looking at. So that's kind of a sticking point, but took a few guesses just to see and like made some changes to our listing, see where the ranks are, and repeat that process. So it's nice having a little bit more visibility, but until we know more about what they're looking for, it's kind of hard to say. So, yeah. And there's more we can do on our own website and trying to get people to our own site that I think would help as well.
Yep. So I guess on the user feed side, you know, because advertising may not be the best route in terms of like ROI, and obviously not a true kind of like sales model either because it's so low cost, you know, content comes into play. Like that's obviously a big deal. And so we've been trying a bunch of different things. So we are doing a bunch of different things and plan to continue to optimize and do them better. But one is our audience in general is, you know, they're Intercom customers. So if our goal is to, you know, our kind of singular goal is to help them on the feedback side, our larger goal is to help them to grow using Intercom. And so because we're also Intercom customers, you know, I think we do a lot of cool things within Intercom, like different automations and just different things that are kind of things that people typically don't do with Intercom or they don't know how to do. They're not the general kind of products that Intercom advertises or talks about. So we basically decided, hey, let's focus from a content perspective on you know, talking about and laying out these different Intercom templates and use cases of things that we do, little automations, you know, things like that that we do, and like talk about those things, create templates that people can, you know, hopefully go use within their own business. And that's been pretty successful. And I think who was talking about the other day? Tyler from Earnest Capital was like talking about a bunch of different, you know, Intercom automations that he's trying to help with all of his portfolio companies. And so it's the kind of thing that people that are using Intercom are thinking about or wanting to do. Yeah. And so we just have been writing a ton of content. So if you want to check out our blog, we have a whole Intercom templates and use cases section.
I'll throw a link in the show notes.
Yeah. And I think one more thing we do that I'm not going to go in detail in because I don't think we have enough time. I think this could be a whole episode possibly. We also are doing some pretty, I think it's pretty cool stuff on LinkedIn, prospecting wise. So a lot of automation through LinkedIn and other tools to find the right people and all that kind of stuff, which we could talk about on another episode. But I'm having some pretty good success with that. And I know there's a lot of people in here that probably are trying to do that or would be interested in that. So
Yeah, it would be cool if we had maybe episodes about tactics, like we get a little more specific on a couple different things. Yeah. So
yeah. So I don't know if we the last thing that I forgot. So we also, not to go too much in detail, but we've kind of started like a little Intercom user group that we plan to make kind of bigger and better over time, but just a place where people, basically a Slack group where people can go and ask questions about, you know, certain things they might be trying to do in Intercom, whether they're on the sales side of the business, product side, customer success side. Anybody can join that, you know, obviously is an Intercom customer. And it's just kind of a user group for us to all chat and help each other out. So we've been trying to cultivate that as well. It's going okay. It could be. I mean, we haven't invited a lot of people yet. It's not public. But if you want, by the way, if you're listening to this podcast and you use Intercom, just reach out to us and we'll add you to the Slack group. That's another kind of route to, just build a community around Intercom, I guess, and doing things in Intercom.
Yeah, I think it's nice because since all of our customers are Intercom customers, we obviously spend a lot of time thinking about it. And since we are users also, so the community that we have and the templates that we're putting together, they come from users of Intercom and believers in Intercom. So hopefully it feels a little more, it's not a pure just lead gen strategy. And a lot of the templates we talk about don't even have anything to do with user feed per se. So
yeah,
the goal is obviously just to highlight all the cool stuff you can do with Intercom. So, but yeah, just let us know. You can tweet at us or head over to Made with Grit or something and we'll find you somehow. Just tweet at us.
Yeah. And I don't know if we want to hit on, we kind of barely touched on it in the beginning, and I know we would try to end this within 30 minutes, but the topic that people, I guess, keep talking about, which this idea of like this trade-off between being profitable and not having happy customers, or not being profitable and having happy customers. I think that that's probably not so black and white.
Yeah, well, a false dichotomy, maybe. I mean, it's like everything. It's when you distill anything into a tweet, well, there goes all the nuance most of the time. There's multiple facets here. So one is a dimension of how conservative, like a spectrum. How conservative do you want to be on this spectrum? And then, I mean, profitability is obviously related to that, but it's not like if you want to be aggressive, you also have to be unprofitable. Right. And I think connecting those two things makes sense because they are related, but it also doesn't, because you can be profitable and you can sort of dial that profitability up or down, but you don't have to lose it entirely, or you don't have to raise money. You don't have to just go, there's not like one path to being aggressive. If you want to be aggressive, like you can hire a little bit ahead of cash flow, but remain, you know, profitable on the year, or on the month, or on the quarter. So I just think it's tricky to say, like, if you want to grow faster, you have to like spend more or become unprofitable. Or if your business gets to a certain size, you have to, you know, let it take over and try to raise money, or let you have to like fuel the fire. I mean, I think it's not somewhere where we are, but it is something we're thinking more about because of this advertising working.
We've seen some examples of like all these different things, but I guess one good example to talk about, maybe, that I think a lot of people don't talk about them, but so we actually used to work at Calendly's office, just calendly.com. I bet you probably anybody listening to this has used that product or seen it. So we used to, they're based in Atlanta. We're good friends with the founder, and we used to work out of their office for, about a year. They're pretty much fully bootstrapped, I'm not going to say the exact revenue, but tens of millions in revenue, very, very profitable. And they have very happy customers. You know, they maybe have like 60 employees, like super small company, very profitable, and they seem to have happy, you know, they have happy customers. Of course, there's going to be people that are like, I need this feature, but that's the problem too. It's like, you're never going to have all the features.
Well, and I know on Twitter this discussion happened, I chimed in, but it's like part of reinvesting in growth, whether that's, you know, outside capital, your own money, or to the point where you're dipping below profitability, it's kind of like, it assumes that you can do that in a way that produces the outcomes that you want. And that's not always the case. And the opposite is also true, right? Like if you don't reinvest heavily, aggressively, it doesn't mean you can't give people what they want. Obviously, if you have more people, theoretically, you can build more things and have more support and whatever. But it also creates a lot of overhead and a lot of communication gaps that can cause, you know, issues on, oh, we released all these features, but none of them were good or they were overkill. Or I mean, yeah. I know Sahil from Gumroad talked about this at MicroConf a little bit, but like they raised all this money, they built all this stuff and it was amazing. But like, it's like, that wasn't the only thing that needed to happen, yep. Right?
But also another thing is like, let's say you raise money and you start spending it and you hire more people and you get more features out. A good example of this is actually Intercom. So, and obviously we love Intercom, but they're pounding out features left and right. Like it's an amazing, amazing product. And if you're a startup, you probably should use it. They have a good startup plan. But like one thing that's sort of happened is they've had to go up market, number one, because they've raised so much money. They have to go up. And also they have a stronghold on like the SMB market. And so naturally they're going to go up market. But you raise that much money, of course, you've got to bring those returns back and maybe pricing has gone up. They've gone up market, and so they're, you know, there's just there's a lot of people that are pretty vocal about their pricing and not liking it. And so, yeah, even if you build all the great features in the world, you know, there's still gonna be like you may have to do things that that piss people off. So it's like there's a lot of gray area with all of this.
And then you have, like, I'm sure they're struggling to figure out how to message all the new features because they have such a range of customer sizes and, like, the cost of the different things is obviously going to apply differently to different people. And even within, you know, a company that's growing fast, like, it's hard. It can become harder to move fast and effectively, right? So I just think, it's tricky. It's easier to have this conversation on a podcast and go through all the different, you know, aspects of it, the different dimensions of it. Whereas Twitter doesn't really let you do that. But
the point is like, it's definitely not, it's very much a gray area.
It's not binary. It's not this or that. And I think as we've seen, even in just under 3 years of doing this, like during different points of our company, we feel differently about it based on how we're doing as humans, how our businesses are doing, what types of initiatives we're working on, et cetera. So
there's points where we probably could have made decisions that helped us grow faster, but at the time you don't know. I think the most important thing is that you're, you know, obviously doing the best that you can, trying to build value for your customers, and also making sure that while you're doing all those things, you're also happy with what you're doing. Obviously you need to be making money, because if you're not growing, like, you're not gonna be able to do this that long if this is your full-time thing. So, but I think those things are like, it doesn't always have to be, we have to grow the fastest all the time. Like it doesn't need to be that. If you don't grow as fast as you possibly could have, that's okay.
Yeah.
As long as those other things are in place.
Yeah, totally. So. Yeah. Well, I'm sure this conversation I'm sure it'll come up again, especially as we figure out the advertising stuff and look into hiring more or whatever we're going to do next. So we'll keep hitting on that. But
stuff will come up. We'll have more information like in the next probably 2 months as to like, is this stuff working as well as we thought and what channels are working and all that stuff. And we'll share all that. So, we need to get out of here and go hang out in the good weather.
Yes, I am going to go outside. So... until next time, thanks for listening. Let us know your feedback at MadeWithGritFM on Twitter.
All right. See ya.
That's it.